Today is Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. It is 9:05 a.m., and this is panel 2103, Analogies and Anecdotes, Crafting Creative Connections. I'm Eric Klinger, and I'll be moderating the panel today. You should have received a note card and hopefully a pen or have a pen with you. We will be doing some writing today, and we have a wonderful group of panelists who are here to inspire us. So start by introducing Priya Jha. She is a professor and chair of English at the University of the Redlands. Her current work focuses on bringing the personal into the critical. This is drawn from research on the dispossessed. Priya also does research in media and cultural studies and feminism. Right here, I have Carolina, the storyteller. She focuses on Latin American traditional stories and has a podcast called Tres Cuentos. And this is a bilingual podcast that talks about Latin American traditional stories. Mary Reynolds Thompson is our third panelist. She is an author who works with archetypes and metaphor and has a website, or is it a website?
Yeah, and yes, a website as well, yes, called.
A website called Write the Damn Book. I love this. As somebody who does a lot of writing and works with a lot of writers, that is perfect. It captures, I think, the spirit of the writer very well. And she also suffers from a condition called metaphoria. We're hoping that it's contagious and that many people leave here today with a severe case of metaphoria. So I thought we could begin with opening remarks from the panelists, and then we will have some writing exercises, opportunities for you to share some of what you've written, and we'll have some questions for the panelists. So if anyone would like to begin with opening remarks.
Good morning. Thank you for coming out on such an icky day. I missed the sun from yesterday. Just briefly, my history in terms of writing, and I don't mean me writing so much, because writing is part of my profession. But I started writing in 1993 when I went to school here, and I worked on a program that was for what back then was called at-risk students. Now I think they're called non-traditional students. So I worked with athletes, students of color, returning students, just such a diverse group population. And so that has really shaped my pedagogy in so many ways. And this was back in 1993, and I still carry the lessons I learned there. As well, I had incredible mentors there, and who are very close friends of mine here, and we still talk about some of the ideas that we were talking about back then. So that's part of my history around writing. So teaching students who may be not conversant with English, for example, who may not have had a fuller experience in their education of really practicing writing, and they might say, "Oh, I can't. I can't write. I'm a bad writer. I don't have the talent." That's always the big thing. And my response is, "It's just practice. You just practice." And so in my classes, I have taken everything that I learned here as a student to heart, and I bring it into my classes. My classes are, I sort of teach literature, but I mostly teach film and popular culture, and women's studies, and ethnic studies. Those are the departments with which I'm affiliated. My school is very interdisciplinary, and my work is very interdisciplinary. And so what I try to do is to impress upon them the value of their own voice and how that matters in terms of the critical work that they do. And so often I'll write alongside my students. So if they're writing their essays over the course of the semester, I'll be writing something with them. And so we trade work. So writing is also community-based, and that's something else I try to impress upon them. And upon myself, we often write in solitude, me and my computer, right? And so that's really important. And, at my school, our students don't have to take comp classes. They have writing requirements that are embedded within certain classes across our college. So they're getting some writing, they're getting some, let's say, literature, right? So I work really hard to begin to integrate that. So, you know, I take what I was doing when I was teaching composition and integrate it with the writing of the essays that they do. And sometimes I have them, you know, I mean, there's such a wide variety of writing. Sometimes I have them write manifestos, which is fun, feminist manifestos. They did really well in that one. But, you know, all different kinds of writing, because I want them to get that experience. Even though my training as, you know, in getting my PhD was, you must write a critical essay. You must incorporate theory, right? And, you know, and theory, I think, is another very important facet of writing. And, you know, this generation doesn't give a damn about what I was taught. You know? And so to impress upon them that theory is who we live, how we read the world, how we interact with the world. So a lot of times in my theory courses, that's what I have them draw from, to read different signs. And so that's, you know, so I like the creative work. I'm also writing a memoir called Not That Kind of Indian. Mm. Please laugh. Nobody laughs. And I'm also writing an academic book on colonialism and design. But which is, you know, my work, not design. Design is very new for me, so I'm very excited. But that was, my memoir was really interesting because I have been really thinking about being part of the 1.5 generation. You know, I moved here when I was 10. And, you know, what was that experience like? And there aren't stories. There aren't a lot of stories about us. And I've been reading a little bit about the 1.5 generation. And one day I sat down to just write, and this book poured out, which is amazing. So apparently it had been sitting there for a long time. And I actually drew from the different theories that I move around in to help me craft the story of this girl. And so, again, the integration, I think, is really important. I will not shut up. Because I can talk. Boy, can I talk. So, anyway, so that's roughly my background. I also work with, you know, we have summer bridge programs working with high school students. So I teach writing classes with them. And so that's really fun. So, you know, it's good. Writing is fun. Writing is great. I like to write every day, but I don't have time. I'm sure of my department. I definitely don't have time.
The importance of hearing our own voices, and we're hoping to hear a lot of your voices today, and writing in community, which we'll also be doing today, which is so absolutely delicious. I just want to say, I think, three things. I think language needs to be rewilded as much as our earth. It's overly domesticated, it's overly tamed, we've clipped it and controlled it, to the point where it's lost its resiliency and vigor. So I love to think of writing, and in the writing groups that I do, of really that coming from the duff of our bodies, out of the earth of who we are and who we be, that writing itself is an embodied process. The other thing that I think is really connected to this topic of anecdote and analogy is that we are trying to make connections with our audience. Now, if language has no wildness in it, it's going to land like a dead fish, right, in our readers' things. It will not change a heart or a mind or a pulse in somebody else's body. So the idea of reinvigorating our thing is to move people, to connect with them, to touch into their hearts. And when we write anecdotes, these short stories, and when we make analogies, these comparisons, connecting things that we might not have known, actually were in relationship to each other, these leaps of imagination, I think we're writing ecologically, because what we're realizing is that we're entering a process that is interconnected, that these ideas that I have connect to all kinds of other things outside of me, within me, associations. I want to be surprised by what I write. I hope today you will be surprised by something you write, and I'll leave it there.
Well, hello, everyone. So in my case, I am a traditional storyteller. That means that I just tell stories, oral tradition stories. I do not write. I'm not a writer. I don't claim it. I just I adapt stories. I retell stories. I rewrite stories. So I don't have any unique, original ideas. Because I do believe that, I mean, there's so much already said, we just need to update it and recycle and keep bringing it. So in my case, I'm like in the old school of storytellers. Before you write, before you read, you tell. I mean, we were born storytellers. The moment you start using your language, you say, Mom, guess what? Dad, guess what? And that means that you're about to tell something. You might not call it a story, but it is. An anecdote is it. That's what it is. It's a story. So you are born storytellers, whether you like it or not, whether you believe it or not, because a lot of people say, I don't have stories. Yeah, you do. I mean, what happened? I mean, you're a story. What happened this morning? How did you get here? What happened yesterday? Those are stories. So to me, when I go to schools, a lot of times the teachers share that students don't like to read. And even kids, they don't have any shame saying, I hate reading. I hate books. And of course, you're never going to get them to write anything if they don't even read, right? But the problem is that reading has become this such a burden. If you don't read, you're not smart. That's pretty much what society is telling you all this time. You're not going to be intelligent if you're not reading. So what is my what's what I say? So what? You don't have to read. You have to listen. You have to tell stories. Just keep talking. Keep talking and keep listening. And from there, eventually, someone will develop, whoever we develop, that instinct of, you know what, I want to know more. And perhaps a person by itself might not have that thing that I want to know more is a book, right? So you just have to keep talking and talking and telling stories all the time and listen. And that's how you get the kids to eventually read. And then from there, they will want to write. Because you want to write when you want to say something and you want to keep it there forever, right? So, yeah, I mean, I'm all pro. Keep talking, keep telling stories to yourselves, to your friends, because that's what we've been doing since the beginning of times. Writing is a new thing. I mean, it's just 1,000 years ago, probably, or, yeah. But we've just been talking since forever.
All right. Thank you. So I think let's move on to some writing now. Mary has prepared our first exercise, so I will let her introduce that.
Yeah, so we're going to begin you with a really, what I call it, quite a structured write. Because sometimes when you're beginning writing, it's nice to have a quite contained exercise, because it can be intimidating to think you have to, you know, fill reams of paper. So what we're going to do is an exercise based on analogy. So I want you to take out your journals or your little index cards that you were given. And I want you to make two lists. And on the left side of your piece of paper, I want you to list up to 5 abstract big things, words, like war, like that would be a big word, peace, love, maybe climate change. You know, those words which hold such magnitudes, what do we mean? They're very big words and they're quite abstract.
Mm-hmm. So should we write those ones?
So write that down, up to 5 on the left-hand side of your piece of paper. And if you are not certain of what I'm saying, just ask. Okay, up to 5. Yeah. And I'm just going to give you a minute for this. I'm going to get out my little butt. And just the first things that come to mind. Don't over fret any of this. And if you've got five, kind of look at me and nod. Okay. Great. Good. We've got lots of nodding heads. Good. And if you've got three, that's good too. So on the right-hand side of your page, you are going to write a list of up to five adjective nouns. So, green snake, running river. So just have a noun and describe it. Small man, frightening dream. Sorry, frightening dream. Sorry, I could see that you weren't. Sorry, thank you for that. Frightening dream, so it's an adjective noun. Just greasy road, hair. Up to five. So when you have five, begin nodding at me. Okay. So now, with a great leap of faith, what I want you to do, don't overthink this, is simply draw a line between one of the things on the left-hand side of the page with one on the right. Okay, don't overthink it. Just do it. Okay, so it might sound like if I had climate change on the left-hand side of my page, an old man on the right-hand side of my page, it might be something like climate change is an old man that wheezes in the corner, sounding of death, but whom no one hears, right? Kind of a crazy analogy, a little bleak, but so just have fun with it and write maybe on from there. Why is that? What is the connection? Allow that intuitive, instinctual part of you to trust that there is a connection and you will find it. Are you with me? I'm going to just do one of them, just one, and don't overthink it. Just draw that link, and I'm going to give you 3 minutes to write, and I will give you a 1 minute warning when you're at the end. Yes. Sure. So give me an example of two that you've got on your thing. Give me one on the left and one on the right.
Wonder.
Wonder, okay. Wonder, so just begin your piece. Wonder is like a galloping horse, and just run with it. Like a galloping horse. Okay, good. And continue. You've got 3 minutes. And I'll... And just another minute. and find your stopping place and just bring it to a close. Okay. So I believe that we have a system here. Are you going to share that?
Yes. So right now we have a producer walking around the room collecting cards from anyone who would be interested in sharing what you came up with for this exercise.
Are we able to take the mic around and actually have people read their own things to, in their own voices? It would be. So
is that something we could do, Emma?
We'd have much.
People... Could, okay.
Would anybody be bold enough to come up here?
Come on.
Go for it. Much. Here's a perfect place. We have an end mic.
Oh, wonderful.
And let's do it. It'd be so much more. Oh, yeah. There are steps this side, by the way. But,
yeah, but
thank you for
the,
that. You are a
I've never been couth.
Go, girl. Go, girl.
Okay. My word was joy.
I don't know how far. My.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that. I've never been good with this.
Okay. And full attention.
My word is joy. Yeah. The little adjective and noun is beautiful horse. Okay, lovingly joy-filled and opening heartfelt, my beautiful horse rears in my heart, comes galloping forward, pulling me along. So I'm riding, she's in me, and this is such joy.
Oh. Do you know, I have this thing, I'm going to do this because that was so beautiful, that instead of applauding, because then people go, I had this much applause or that much applause, just tinkle fingers.
Ooh,
we tinkle fingers at
tinkle
you.
Tinkle fingers.
Thank you.
Okay.
More practice?
Okay, but I've got two here. Okay, I've got two here from people who are too shy to come up and read them themselves, but I have, death is like a noisy church. Death is like a noisy church. Should be clear-cut, complete, and finished quietly, but instead it remains a congestion of voices, movements, and misunderstanding.
Ooh.
Tinkle fingers.
Thank you.
And another one here. Danger is a drizzly rain, building ominously overhead and underfoot, slippery.
Back to
tinkle fingers. Thank you.
Yes.
Great. It's just easier. Perfect.
Way.
I like that.
Already impressed.
Okay. I'm going to do these things. Okay. I guess this is a poem since that was. Okay. Life as a red apple. Bright, crisp, sweet, tart. It can fall from its tree to create anew, both trees and thoughts, when we sit under and eat it. Spit out the seeds.
There's steps over there. Do you want to climb up?
First, thank you, Mary. It looks like this is as a former park ranger, I call this fire starter, kindling. It's just something to get you writing. But I was amazed at how all five of the things had natural connection, the abstract to the adjective noun. I chose nature and peace. Sitting beside the running river, finding peace in nature, as if I rested calmly as a newborn baby at my mother's breast. I come here to the running river for peace, joy, wonder, and to be healed, nurtured, and embraced by nature, my great-great-grandest mother of us all. I kneel, bow, and pray for her holy hand of wisdom and guidance to lighten my outer being and enlighten my inner self.
I'm a diplomat, so I'm much more literal. my words were peace and straight talk.
In order to have peace, we need leaders and publics to engage in straight talk and open discussion. All sides need time to explain their views, but also time to listen and hear the other sides. Other sides, because there are never just two views, but many often entrenched ideas and histories that should not be squelched or ignored.
Yes. Can I say this is my favorite thing in the world?
It's so fun.
I love this. Thank you for the invitation. Forgiveness is a calm breeze, sweeping dust off the calcified corners and washing away all that is frozen, stiff, and misunderstood, revealing what's hidden underneath.
That's me clapping
myself. Thank you.
I should always do that for you.
Sphinxes combined with scraggly gravel. The sphinxes of Saturn were made of scraggly gravel spewn from the innermost icy ring upon the global surface. These sphinxes roller skated like like Earth's own magnetic pull depicted by the play Hamlet.
I think we're getting rewilded language here, that's for sure.
Creation is like a precocious child. It sees with fresh eyes and cares not for tradition. It tears open new paths and builds new structures with old blocks.
Thank you. I don't think I heard any dead fish at all. That was a lot of fun. Let's see. Priya, would you like to do our next writing exercise?
Yeah. So this is partly based on an assignment I give my students in a class where we theorize the other. And it's a class on Gothic literature. And it's a writing class, too. So the first assignment, which is about their voice, is called The Ghosts That Haunt Me. And this is what I'm going to have to do. This is about anecdotes, right? And our panel, so I want to talk about anecdotes. I want you to have write about anecdotes and why they matter. So what they're asked to do is to take a person, place, thing, or event that they've been carrying with them and to draw from class readings to write about it. So I'd like you to, if you know, you have no class reading, so. But what I'd like for you to do is in your notebook or wherever, write briefly about an anecdote, a person, place, event, something that is there for you. And then once you're done writing that, maybe in two or three sentences, try to figure out why that matters. Why are you remembering it?
Okay.
How can you turn that into a story? Like a, you know, like a kind of this written story in a way.
And Priya, how long will you give them?
How long should I give them?
How long?
Why don't we do 5 minutes?
5 minutes? So maybe spend 3 minutes thinking. Maybe something that just comes,
yes,
you know, to you off the top of your head. And then you can line up if you want to read yours. Yeah? I like the reading.
Okay.
do we?
So that way they don't have to karate. You just can hold it here and they come and share here. And it's a short trip for everybody. They could fall there too. I work in logistics as an MT before.
Ah, okay.
That stuff scares me.
If you could just wrap it up. And if you're interested in reading yours, please line up over here. On the, my right-hand side, which is your left-hand side. I remember that.
I'm really thankful.
Thank you.
And I see we have some students. We would especially love to hear from you guys if any of you would like to share your writing with us.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I think some of them arrived after.
Okay, good morning.
We have a friendly audience. Don't worry.
When I came to the United—oops, are we ready?
Yes, yes.
When I came to the United States as a 12-year-old, I had to learn English quickly. Looking up translations from my German mother tongue didn't always convey what I intended. I remember I wore a skirt with a slip underneath, as one was required to do in those modest days where you wouldn't want to show hints that you actually had a bottom. So I asked my friends one morning, "Is my slip looking?" And they laughed. Instead of showing, looking. Is my slip looking?
That was great.
I wrote this from my own college days. When I was in college in Grand Junction, Colorado, I went by a house on a corner every day. It seemed empty until one early spring day. I met a lady tending a greening rose bush. She came to the fence to say hello to me and my then 2-year-old son. She gave my son a cookie, one I held so it was real. Long and short, by fall 1990, I learned, after speaking to a neighbor, that she had died in 1987.
The barbarian was drunk on thickest ankles that walked off when confronted by the rights of the people's housekeeper, whose child had said, "Mommy, that girl stole my elephant. You made me for my birthday. Its pelvis area is loosened, and now its hip hangs out from the socket like a window box on the second floor's windowsill. Now it has the measles on its shoesies because the barbarian touched it."
For some reason, I'm contemplating rain today. Rain gathers in the distance. Mild gray overcast is slowly consumed by rolling black darkness as the day prematurely turns to night. Like the apocalypse descending, the clouds are a herd of black horses gathering speed running towards me. When the storm breaks, people scatter. Fat drops fall with increasing speed until they feel less like individuals than an unbroken sheet. The streets begin to run with water an inch deep and soon six, and the busy city grinds to a halt. All of us mere mortals peer in awe from our broken awnings and crowded entrances to buildings.
Swishing on the elliptical as her voice comes through the phone to tell me the news, the big wedding coming soon, the trip, the diamond ring, the way they all want something to look forward to, something good for her family. And the waves of jealousy lap the shoreline at first, but I swish and I swish until they recede, and something new comes to the shore, something softer than joy, something closer to love. It's been a hard year for me, and other celebration just reminds me of this hardness. But my commitment to a higher road, to celebrating another's joy, still breaks through, and I'm proud of this.
Switching, scrambling, I leap on her back. Wind-filled and fortified, galloping, leaping, my steeplechase run, bareback on Foxy. Jumps only a foot or two high, but so many of them, till the end of the draw. I slide off her back, throwing off all my clothes. The moss-covered rock waterfall beckons. I slide gloriously down, splashing in the teeniness of the cold water pond. She jumps in also. We shake, shiver in sunlight and wonder.
Thank you so much for sharing these. It's wonderful to watch the panelists beam as you read these. There's an energy in the room that is just really unique. So I believe we have time for one more writing exercise. So I'll have Carolina introduce that, and then we'll have some time for closing remarks by the panelists at the end.
Okay, so before I go into the exercise, as I said before, I'm not a writer. I'm a rewriter, reteller of stories. So that's exactly what we're going to do. But when I learned this one from a famous storyteller called David Novak, he helped us make connections between stories, because sometimes you think, I don't have anything to say, or my anecdote is not as fun as da-da-da-da-da. And thanks to this exercise, we were able to connect fairy tales and myths or legends that we have heard with our own personal anecdotes. So that way you connect that hero that you know with your own hero, which is yourself. So just for you to understand what I'm talking about, do you know the princess and the pea?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? See, I don't have to explain it, right? So in my case, when I first came to the United States, I was very terrified, and especially I went to Tennessee, and it's very cold, and it's very different from my country, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I met this guy whose family had a house in the top of a hill, and it was a beautiful house. And the first day I came to the house, and we're driving up the hill, see all these big trees, and it looks like I'm going into an enchanted forest, and there's going to be that castle over there. And I'm terrified. I'm depressed, by the way. I'm hating it. I just want to go back home. I just don't like where I am. And so I'm going through this whole thing, and then we enter to this big, gigantic house that is not necessarily that big, but it's like tall ceilings that their father built. So there's a lot of pride on that. And I met the mother, and I ended up sleeping there that night because it was too late for them to take me back home. I was living really far away. And they took me upstairs, and I'm not used to high beds. Right, and this was a really high bed, and I'm not used to it because I have the experience of once my parents bought me a high bed, and I fell from it several times, and I hate high beds, so I had to use stairs to climb up that bed, and I had a terrible night because I just couldn't sleep thinking I was going to fall off the bed, and I had to put pillows around me so they would stop me from. So next night, the lady asked me, how did you sleep? And I'm like, not very well. And when she asked me that, I remember the princess and the pea, because that's exactly what she, how did you sleep last night? And just by her saying I didn't sleep well is how she found out that she was a princess, right? And while we're talking with this lady, she offers me coffee, and I don't know what we said later, but then she ended up saying, oh, you're such a princess. And that's how I wrapped up my whole story, and I ended up telling at a storytelling concert how, from an anecdote, which is my personal, I went on to telling the anecdote of when I was a child, the fear of the mattress, and how this relates to the princess of the pea, and how I felt a princess when I was feeling so terribly bad, and I just wanted to go back home because I was the only, in Tennessee, I'm sorry to say this, but there's a lot of white people. And when I was looking, going around, and everybody, I mean, I'm pretty noticeable when you're like this color of a skin. And so everybody looks at you like you're this novelty thing. And I was not that, I should have been feeling like a princess, but I was feeling the entire opposite. And so that was my way to connect. And that's what we're going to do today. So the way we're going to do it, this is normally with an octagon figure. We're going to be using geometry. Sorry about that. But we're going to do just triangles. So I want you to draw a triangle. This center triangle that you see right here. You all guys can see it, right? And I want to draw other triangles, like the little eyes and mouth, if that's that makes sense, nose, eyes, and mouth, all right? And in the inner triangle, inside of it on the three sides, we're going to use the story of Cinderella. So when you're using a story, you try to dissect the story and think about the words that will characterize that story. Now, if we were using an octagon, you will have more options, but it's a triangle, so you only have three options for this. And the options are gonna be shoes. So I want you to write shoes. And the other one will be mean siblings, and another one will be magic helper, which in her case was a fairy, right? Well, you all know Cinderella, right? Okay. I'm trying to use something I assume most of the people know, right? Okay, so now... fairy or magic helper. Okay? So what you're going to do is that on the triangles that are adjacent to the around, on this very line that is connecting to the shoes or to the mean siblings and to the other one, I want you to think about your own anecdote or a myth or a legend or a fairy tale that comes to your mind, the first story that comes to your mind. It doesn't have to be personal. Better if it is. But if it doesn't, that has the word shoes or it has some shoe in it. Right? And so you write the name of that story, and if it's an anecdote, just give it as a title so you can sort of remember that time when you lost your shoes. The time where my shoes got stuck in the mud. The time I sold my shoes. I don't know. The time I lost the one shoe. I'm trying to trigger your memory right there. Or the time my mom gave me her shoes. The time I walked into my neighbor's shoes. Stuff like that. And then mean siblings. I'm pretty sure we all have mean siblings. So that should be an easy one. My mean sister. The time my mean sister played a prank on me. The time my mean dad was, I don't know, playing a joke on me. That kind of thing. And then the last one, the fairy or the magic helper, is that time when someone helped you and you felt grateful for it. So maybe you were stuck in the mud and someone came and, you know, got you out of it. You were through a depression or something and you had a good talk with someone, or the trees talked to you, or your dog was that magic helper. So it's just like that little thing right there. And then in the other sides of the triangles, keep exploring other things about that same story. I'll just stand up. Can you all hear me? I can project. Okay, good. So let's say you wrote here shoes, and here you wrote the time I lost the one shoe, right? So around that time that you lost that one shoe, there has to be other things that happened, right? Where did you lose your shoe? At the mall. So right here on this other side, the mall, right? So it's other two words that are related to that same experience. Again, it doesn't have to be your anecdote. It can be a myth. A myth that someone, I mean, is there a myth with shoes or mean siblings? There's a lot with mean siblings, right? There's a lot with fairies or magic helpers. So you just keep completing right there. And you just nod when you're ready. And what we're going to do is, since you're not going to be doing exactly what you guys did before coming, because you're not going to be telling a story, this will take forever. But you can certainly come and just share, or from where you are, share those two, three stories that you found that connected.
Yeah,
that's all I want you to say. From that Cinderella, I connected to the mean sibling this way. From that Cinderella fairy, I connected to this other thing. Yeah, that's all I want you to say. That's all.
What's the name of the person who came up with the idea for me? That's a very interesting process. Thank you.
know it sounds complex. It seemed complex at the beginning when he talked to us, but the more you do it, it just gets easier and easier, and it really helps with connections, especially when sometimes you're trying to connect to people in their level and you don't have a way to connect. And some of the easiest ways to connect is just through stories, fairy tales, legends, and myths, and things that are more common than your personal experience. Yes?
Are we looking for connections across the three areas, like in the center triangle?
Say that again?
Are we looking for connections or themes or some way to unite the three different?
No, not necessarily. No, you don't have to. No, as long as you can connect two, that's all you want. Yeah. Eventually, I mean, in my case as a performer, I'm constantly trying to connect because I always have to tell at least three stories for 60 minutes. So I'm trying to go from one story in diving into the other one and diving into the other one. And that's the whole purpose of this one, that I can dive. For instance, when I was telling the princess of the princess and the pea, I normally tell that briefly in a minute just to refresh people's memories, and then I start telling my own personal story when I was depressed, blah blah blah, and then he took me and we went up and when we went into this castle and everything that happened, that I had to sleep there, and that it took me back in time. So there's a third story right there when I'm remembering those times when I was falling off the bed that my parents got me, that I hated, and then when this lady next day asked me, how did you sleep? So you see, I just told three stories. I was diving, and then I surfaced back again. It sounds complex, I know, but it's not that complex. The more you do it, the easier it gets. And you actually do it every single day. The moment you start, like, guess what happened? You remember that thing that I got the other days, those black shoes that I got that were so expensive? Remember that? Yes, of course. You made me go and work for 2 hours to get those shoes. Yeah, well, it happens that I was wearing the shoes, and then this lady came, and then she told me that she had the same shoes, and she thought that I had stolen the shoes. And then the whole lady goes on telling me the whole story, and the story was this and this and this. And at the end, I'm trying to tell her that those are not her shoes. But then we have to go to the store to prove that I had bought the shoes. Of course, I didn't have the receipt. See, I told you like three stories right there. And that's what we all do constantly. It's just that you're not doing it consciously. It's just an unconscious thing. But it's just natural. That's just the way we communicate. Okay, so anybody would like to share? I was just filling up time, sorry.
Also, if the panelists have any.
Yeah, you can, I mean, it's easier to...
Just come here. Yeah, that's good.
Awesome.
Oops, got to take off my glasses. So, my story about shoes, I am a dancer, and I love Cuban dance. It's one of my favorite styles. And I was in a performance in Fairbanks, and the director was Cuban, and he was very used to Cuban women who danced in the highest possible heels and wore these beautiful extension hairs called moños that they use, and they just look beautiful. You know, Cuban women do. But I was terrified because he wanted us all to buy the highest possible heels. So I completely was terrified, and I rebelled, and I came with these short, stumpy little heels, and he was very upset with me, as he should be, because we were supposed to have gold high-heeled shoes. And I said, I am not going to break my leg for this dance. I was just completely terrified. So I had a dear friend, and the director was wonderful, and he had a beautiful dance, but nonetheless, I was terrified. I always have been of high heels. So I had a wonderful friend who was very, very, very good on the computer, and within 5 minutes, she had ordered me the most beautiful but lower-heeled gold shoes.
Aww. See, that wasn't that hard, and it actually reminds me, there is, I think it's a Hungarian tale, or it's Eastern European, about dancing on the fire with shoes. So she has to dance and never worn out the shoes, and she's dancing on fire. Of course they're going to get worn out. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the whole trick of it. I mean, you should look it up. I'm just saying, because it kind of made me feel like that. Anybody else? I know it's a tough one.
Okay. Well, I believe we have some time for closing remarks, if anyone on the panel would like to get us started.
I'm not quite sure what to say. Other than thank you.
Yeah.
This was really amazing for me to hear all these different stories. And writing, I think, also takes a lot of courage. And sharing writing, especially so, you know, because we're vulnerable when we write. And so thank you.
Yeah, I just also want to say thank you so much. Hearing your voices was a sheer joy, absolutely. And to encourage you, there's something really amazing about having your own voices witnessed as well. So writing is part of the process, but if you can find a community that will hold you and that feels safe and sacred for you to really begin to share your stories, then I would really encourage you to make that part of your writing process. The other thing I want to say is, down here, this amazing woman has been creating visual responses to all of the writing prompts. So please go and take a look and ask questions, because there are many ways to tell stories, as we've been learning. And visually, it's just another way of beginning to articulate our stories. So please take a look and get into conversation.
On the floor at the end, and then we call it a big tent, all the drawings.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Are already in the big
tent,
a lot of them. Thank you.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, just keep telling stories to yourself, to others, to your buddies, to your dog, to your plants, to whoever listens to the stories, that's how it is. A friend of mine always said that one of the best ways to rehearse a story is by gossiping. And I know gossiping is criminalized by a lot of religions, but it's a good constructed gossip is not bad. And that's how we tell stories, by saying, guess what? So go ahead and do it.
And yes, we still have a few minutes, so you can invite a few questions from the audience if you have them.
Yeah, I have a question for.
Actually, why don't we have people come forward to the mic so that everybody can hear, if you don't mind? Thank you.
Hey, could you just reflect on what you would think is bad writing? And maybe, like, I was thinking comedians, to me, I mean, we do a lot of, like, bullshit art, maybe. And if you want, like, a sad clown, and maybe if you want to go a little deeper, you could maybe talk about politics, but I don't know.
I guess my first response would be, I don't know what you mean by bad. So, you know, I mean, I would want to talk about that. I will say writing that's derivative drives me up the wall. You know, I've seen this. And so, and I think part of our challenge always is to figure out how we take the stories that have come before us and really think about transforming them and perhaps rethinking them in our own voice. You know, I do multiple kinds of writing and doodling, which I think is also another important part. So I, you know. And it's funny, I mean, you are asking this question, and I live in an academic environment. You know, I work in the liberal arts college. I teach undergraduates who are woefully underprepared for college-level work. And writing is one of the cornerstones of where they're weak. And so maybe at some level I would take your bad as weak. I read a lot of bad academic writing. I tell my students, like, 90% of what's been published is crap. You know? And because we've been taught to be very esoteric, we haven't been taught how to reach wider audiences, how to be different kinds. You know, when you're talking about the intellectual world, how to be public intellectuals.
And I think it's actually really good that we live in a time where there are things like blogs and, you know, different ways of doing public writing. And so I see that as a direction to kind of combat that weakness. Again, it's the telling of these stories. Like, how do you use what you know? And we're all experts in our own lives, if nothing else. And so to draw from that and to say, this matters in these ways. I hope that answers your question, to some degree at least.
Yeah, I just wanted you to reflect on it, so I'm with you. I didn't really have a good specific question.
But... Yeah, I've seen some pretty bad writing. I sometimes tell my students, a sentence has a noun, a verb, and a direct object. They actually don't understand that. They don't get trained in writing. And I think part of what this bad writing that we're talking about, it comes from the fact that we do not live in a writing culture. We, you know, we all know how to shoot off at the mouth. And usually that's crap. But we don't. I'm also a comedian. My classes are stand-up. But we don't write every day. You know, and I think that's part of what creates this weak writing. It feels really alien. And so I think that badness comes from that distance that we have. And also the sense that writing is something that's set in stone, it's permanent. Mm-hmm. Without the kind of feel of, well, you know, what I'm writing is a work in progress. This is where I am in my stage of thinking. And so that's something else that I really try to impress upon myself, too. I struggle with that. I don't publish anything. Oh, good, that's not mine. I don't publish anything unless it's perfect. And I need to get over that.
Can you think of an author that maybe you witness get better with time?
I'm sorry?
Can you think of an author that you like that you think got better with time and with each book they came out with and like you witness the progress?
Maybe Shimamanda Adichie. You know, her first novel, as good as it is and as compelling as the storytelling is, the writing, I mean, but she was very young when she wrote it too. And she's really coming to her own. And I think part of it is has also been the TED Talks that she does. They really help to solidify where she lives intellectually. I don't agree with her on a number of political issues. In fact, I find her very problematic. She's such a homophobe, for example. Yeah. But I like her novels a great deal. And her TED Talks. I use her TED Talks on a regular basis. And I think that's part of good writing, is like to reach out across a spectrum of expressions.
Could you repeat the name of the author?
So, Chimamanda Adichie. There you go. Do you want me to spell it? I want some money for that. It's Chimamanda. It's her first name. Her last name is Adichie. She's being talked about as the inheritor of Chinua Achebe. You know Chinua Achebe? She's been, you know, she kind of ushers this in this new African writing. And Zadie Smith is another. Like, her first book was so, you know, like, a third of it was so good, and then the remainder of it, I bawled my way through it. I also don't like books that are driven by theory, where the story gets lost.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Character-driven novels, for me, are certainly the more interesting. And I often think, actually, it happens the other way, that the first book is the book that's been building in you for years. And you were talking about the memoir. You know, it's building in you layers and layers over geologic time in your body. And when it comes out, it can be the most forceful, powerful thing. And then oftentimes writers actually struggle to find that same authentic expression. And the thing is, too, like with Zadie Smith Zadie Smith's White Teeth, is her, she just was catapulted to fame. And especially in our culture where you can become, you know, just, you know, so famous overnight. And that in itself really can work on your authenticity. I think in her case it hasn't. She's a real, genuine, deep, rich human being who is staying true to herself. But you can see how the culture of immediate rocketing to fame could really mess with your head and your writing. So, you know, it can work the other way too.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned comedians, and I think they, you know, I
because I work on colonial, I work on all this violence in my classes, I like to only watch comedy when I get home and Game of Thrones. And the 13th time comes in my life. But I think, you know, so I watch a lot of stand-up. I watch, you know, and I'm always looking for that writing. And in films, because I work in film, I get very focused on the writing. And there's some really crappy writers, who are very derivative. They're just bad. And but I think comedians are a place that we can look to, you know. I mean, there's some really excellent work that's being done out there. You know, I think about Russell Peters or... George Carlin, I've been rewatching George Carlin, and I've been showing Carlin to my classes, and they are like digging it. This generation is so excited about Carlin. But you know, you can find, and that political writing. I mean, for me, I'm always drawn to political comedy, and there's some amazing people who are doing work, and that takes a lot of time to come up with a joke. You know, I think that's also, don't you think?
Yeah.
That would be one of the hardest things to write. I could sit down and I can write an essay for you in an hour. But I couldn't make a joke. Okay.
Okay. So on that note, we need to wrap up. Thank you so much for attending today and for your participation and contributions.
So much.